All right, I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again because maybe five or six of you haven't heard it. Ted Turner got a visit from the Grim Reaper. Raise your hand if you know where I'm going. Okay, good. It's not a majority. So Ted Turner got a visit from the Grim Reaper, and he knew what it meant. And so immediately he started pleading, "Oh, please, I'm not ready. I've got too much going on. I've got all these plans. I mean, I just bought more acreage along the Chattahoochee. I was going to go fly fishing tomorrow. Come on. Really? Really? Not now. And the Grim Reaper, in that sort of reaperish way, kind of says, now. Well, what can I do? I mean, I'm just not ready to go. All right, well, if you can bring something with you, if that gets you to go, you can bring something. Come on. I don't have time. Come on. So Ted grabs a suitcase and scurries around his mansion and fills his suitcase, snaps it shut, and comes back out, and reluctantly up he goes to the pearly gates. Some of you may be surprised by that, but there he is. And St. Peter meets him at the pearly gates. And he says, what took you so long? and what's that? And he points at the suitcase. And Ted said, well, the Grim Reaper said that I could bring one thing. If I came now, he'd let me bring this. And St. Peter said, well, open it up. Let's see what's in there. And so Ted leans over, unsnaps it, lays it out open, and it's full of gold bars. Oh, they're shining and glorious. And St. Peter looks at Ted in the eyes and says, you brought pavement? Fool, today your life is required of you. What do you think with these bigger barns? What were you thinking about? Today your life is required of you. Jesus, in maybe a less humorous way, is teaching something that we already know. I don't know that our lives give us a chance to live it out well, but we know this, and we think about it all the time. And that is that there is this vast distance and difference between life on earth and life with God in heaven. We want heaven to be better than this, don't we? Don't we want that realm to be a place where gold is pennies? Don't we want that place to be where no one has bad Achilles tendons? Nobody's nearsighted. All of us who don't have full heads of hair have full heads of hair again. Whatever the restoration is, whatever the cure is, whatever the blessing is, however magnificent heaven can be, we want heaven to be that magnificent, don't we? But what we do with our lives is to live them as if somehow there's a transference of value from here to there. Y'all, it works the other way, I'm pretty sure. That if there is value in our lives, it's not because we have so much abundance that we need bigger barns, or that we can stuff gold bars in a suitcase and that's enough for us. I'm pretty sure if there's value, it's coming from heaven. It's not going from here to there. The whole point of God being in Christ, reconciling the world to God's self, as the Word made flesh, is that value comes down from heaven to us and abides with us and enriches this time now with us, but for a reason that we may not be ready to respond to. Hey, teacher, settle this controversy between me and my brother. Let help us divide our inheritance right now. You know, I've had it with this guy. I want my share. I couldn't help in hearing that moment as the reading today started and not think about the prodigal son and his brother. There's a divided inheritance, and look at the consequences of doing things that way. So that when Jesus is confronted with that situation, when he has that request put before him, be our arbitrator, please. He has to redirect the question and not just answer it, but say, you're asking the wrong question. It's really not about that. That's not where value lies. You can divide it up all you want. It can be abundant. But fool, one day, one night, your life is going to be required of you. Oh my goodness, you guys. I hope that scared you a little bit. I hope that sent a chill up your spine. Just a smidge. Your life is required of you. And you notice that in Jesus' parable, there's no suitcase. I think this is what happens to us in our lives in this day and age. First of all, and I've said this before, and I'm sorry if I'm putting you to sleep by repeating it, but we are the privileged people on this planet. Okay? We just are. We got hot water when we want it. We got cars with gas in them when we need them. We got food on the table. We got it. But what we still do with that abundance is we play with it as if somehow, and I mean this culturally, I'm not picking on anybody in particular, but what we do with this abundance that God has given us, with this value that has come from heaven to earth, with this thing that says life is now worth living, look how beautiful it is and how full of riches it is, oh my goodness, what we do with that is we play at it like it's a zero-sum game. You know what I mean? And you guys about to start, oh, you've already started school. You guys that are going to school, if you don't know what a zero-sum game is, ask your teachers. They need to know if they don't. What we do is we act like there's only so much to go around. And if I don't get mine out of that pile, I'll never have it. And if Johnny gets his out of that pile, then some of mine is gone from the pile. That's what a zero-sum game means. There's only so much, and for everything you take, there's less for everybody else. It all adds up to, in the end, nothing. And that's the way we live. We're living that way now. The country that you and I occupy is number one in consumption on the planet. I think China beats us in two or three categories, and it's not things that we want to compete at. You know, it's like rice. I'm serious. Okay? They buy rice from Arkansas and California. All right? Just say we are the number one consumers on the planet. That's who we are. That's the world we live in. Little mess. And this abundance thing, it's tricky. Because all we need is a morning without breakfast. And we start to worry about where our next meal is coming from. Oh, man, I barely made it through the day. It's a slippery slope. Little baby steps. The next thing you know, we're caught up into that zero-sum game. What happens, though, that is, instead of correcting our course, we add on another layer of benevolence to try to compensate for it. And we do a good job of that. As a church, we support the Boys and Girls Club to a level that none of the other churches in town do. Individually, our collected contributions from this congregation are as much as any other congregation's contributions to the Boys and Girls Club. And that's awesome. I'm not saying there's a bad thing about it, but here's what happens with that. That becomes our way of balancing accounts. We use our benevolence to say, well, you know, I didn't keep it all. By the way, can I have that? I'm not mad. Hey, guys, I'm more worried than I am mad. Because I wonder how it is that we are going to hear God call us when God says, now. I need you now. I need your life now. What are we going to do? Are we going to act like Martha a couple of Sundays ago and do the dishes? That's what some of us will do. Are we going to act like that rich young ruler who had to have the whole question of neighborliness explained to him in the totally backwards way that he was thinking? Are we going to have to find out that we're the ones who need help? Is that what's going to get us to correct course? I don't know. This is hard work that we have in front of us. This bubble of abundance that we live in keeps us from breathing all the air that is out there. Keeps us from seeing all the darkness that is beyond our borders. Keeps us from knowing how much we miss God's voice and how often we miss it and how we don't understand it when it comes. Now, it's not fair for me to be the one talking to you all about this. It's just not fair. Because I got to go through a discernment process that was framed in terms of answering God's call. And I got to accept a calling from God, and it turned into an ordination to the diaconate, and then an ordination to the priesthood. And then every time I went from church to church, they called it a calling. And so it's not fair for me to be the one talking to you all about this. Because quite frankly, there's some mornings I wake up, I don't want to be here either. You know that joke too, right? I don't want to go to church. I don't want to go to church. Well, you have to. You're the priest. Okay. So it's not fair for me to be talking to you all about it. But I tell you what. Until we get to a very radical place in our lives, and I mean this for every single person in the room, big and little, young and old, school's going to be one of those places. School's going to be one of those places where that slope starts to slip. And you start to get distracted by accomplishments and praises and certificates and grades, and you think somehow you just need a bigger barn. And everything will be fine. I just don't know what I'm going to do. And then God's going to say, I need you now. Yikes. I worked with college students. I loved that work. Probably the biggest piece of that work was a program that we ran that used, it was just like happening. It was just like new beginnings. It's called Vocari. Latin for to call. And what we tried to do is to say to the students, what they said to themselves, I mean, it was run by the college students themselves, was God's got a calling for everybody. There's something that God wants you to do because of who you are. God's got something for you to do. And it's your job to try to hear that calling and respond to it. Discern what God is calling you to do. And then we had to differentiate all the different types of callings best we could. And there was callings to ordained life. There was callings to monastic callings. There were callings to, we considered that marriage was a calling. We even considered that staying single was a calling. We really try to cover the possibilities out there. What's ahead of you in your life? How are you going to live such that as God calls you, you can more readily respond to that calling? You can do a better job of answering the call. What's it going to take? How are you going to do that? And for most of the folks that participated in that program, their lives were different from that point on. They were. And a handful of them understood that calling was to something like ordained ministry. I think in the Episcopal Church, we don't really help much. What we do is we push at you until you get confirmed. Right? I'm looking at my newest one. Okay? We push at you until you get confirmed. And then we don't say much to you about it after that. Do we? And any of you all who have tried to answer some sort of calling in your life that you think is coming from God that's sort of outside the parameters of subdeacon service or lector or chalicist, really about all we have to offer you is discernment process at the diocesan level, and you might have to go to seminary. Really, that's about all we've got in this church. I'm sorry. We don't do a good job. Here I am saying to you, you got to do this. And guys, I don't have a book for it. But I don't think a book is going to be the answer. I don't think having a program is exactly what God is talking about when he says to Mr. Multibarn, I need you now. I think there's something more going on in there, too. And we get a glimpse of it when Mary is kneeling at the feet of Jesus. Remember that deep, deep devotion of hers that put her in the wrong place as far as her sister was concerned. But she had chosen the better part. There's something about that that I think is a glimpse into an answer that responds to that question or to that call. I need you now. Now, some of us know a thing called the deacon's prayer. It starts this way. Lord, I thank you for getting me up in the morning. You start the day, thank you. Thank you, Lord. Glad you got me up in the morning. And I thank you, and I thank you, and I thank you, and I thank you. And Lord, be with me as my day proceeds. For the most part, though, it's a gratitude prayer. In some instances, that gratitude creates the best mindset for responding to a calling, though, doesn't it? When you're in a good place, when you've got a lot to be grateful for, and you're grateful for it, you're going to be able to hear God's calling perhaps more readily. But if you've got dishes to do, like Martha, you might miss it. So we've already hinted at some of what it means to answer God's calling in the previous Sundays that we've been together. But y'all, this is hard work. Because of who we are and the world we live in, it's just really hard to say yes every time God calls. To jump how high every time God calls. It's tough. It's hard to do that. So how are we going to do it? Sometimes good sermons end with a question. I think I need to say more than how are we going to do it? I think I need to say this. We're not going to do it alone. I mean, one of the ways that we are able to answer God's calling, especially out of a world that sees itself only measuring up so much, only having enough to go around, and sometimes not even that much to go around. I think that one of the things that we're going to have to do is one-to-one, two-to-two, as a group, as a family, as a congregation, as a part of a larger community, do things like share. Do things like ask others how we can help them. Do things like leave the door open for possibility in our lives and not be so stuck on making sure we've got all of our ducks in a row, but leave a duck loose and see where it goes. There's going to have to be some sort of softening of those boundaries that creates an us and them. Because that's who God is calling. Not just you, but all of us and the whole world. I need you now. Get out of the barn. Some of this lesson is not just for today. Some of this lesson is for our whole lives. Some of this lesson we will hear differently a year from now, 10 years from now. That's the way good lessons are learned, is they keep renewing the invitation to come into that way of seeing things. Every single one of you all knows this too. You can go back into your memory banks and you can remember a teacher that you had. And not because they necessarily had mastered their subject area, not because they gave easy tests, not because they were nice to you every day, but because they pushed a little bit and talked to you in such a way that it took 5 years for you to understand what they were talking about. Music teachers will do that to you, too. Not just teachers. Coaches will do that to you. And they'll say something to you that initially you're like, I can't do that. That's too much. I'm sorry, I can't do that. Not now. Later. I'll be ready for it later. Fool. I need you now. And the pressure builds, though, and over time you'll realize, oh, that's what they were talking about. Do me a favor. When that happens, call them. Touch base with them. If it's 5 years, it's not too late. If it's 10 years, it's not too late. One of the nicest things you can do is to answer their calling, and you can use that as a way to practice answering God's calling. One of the best things a student can do for a teacher is to say, thank you, 20 years later. Oh my goodness. You want to make your teacher cry? Do that. Don't misbehave. So I think that there's lots of ways that we can look at this, but I know for sure that answering God's call, even though it is each one of us, even though his eyes are on the sparrow, even though he can count the dwindling hairs on our heads, even though he's got that capacity to be specific and particular, our answer has got to be all of us. Because that's who he really is calling in the end, is all of us.